Hi, good morning. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, and I'm Felicia King, and I have special guest Kyle Wentworth of the Wentworth Group with us today. And we're going to talk about, as you guys know, Kyle's a CTO, and he's also super long-term experienced in the practical application of the balance between business needs and IT security needs. So we encountered a very interesting article, and then we're having a pretty interesting conversation about it. And it was about 8,000 plus domains of trusted brands that got hijacked for a massive spam operation. And I will post this URL to the article on Hacker News for the listeners. But the article was not terribly clear. And it didn't really get to the nugget of exactly what was a practical risk mitigation approach. So I thought we'd talk about that. So welcome, Kyle.
Good morning, Felicia.
So let's talk a little bit, maybe like frame this operation of the domain hijack for the listeners. And then we can just kind of step through it and see where it went wrong, which then leads to concepts of how you might prevent those issues. So do you want to start us off?
So this whole issue has to deal with domain names that were essentially released from ownership and subdomains belonging to legitimate companies that have well-known names: ACLU, eBay, Marvel, McAfee, Symantec, MSN. There were many of these domain names that were listed in here that were names that you would have never suspected would have ever been subjugated to this kind of an attack. And essentially, hackers came in and compromised these historically legitimate domains and used them for broadcasting a massive spam attack on just the entire world.
So reputational damage and then security damage, and all because, I mean, there are many reasons, but the root thing that would have actually prevented it is if they would have listened to your advice,
if you purchase a domain name, you never let it go. Yep, it's yours, you got it permanently forever. And for business organizations listening to the podcast, the concept of, have you ever had an alias? You get asked this on a lot of security documents that you have to fill out for a passport or for whatever. Have you ever had an alias? Well, you can't ever get rid of that alias. In the IT world, you can. You can just stop paying for it and it goes away. But domain names need to be maintained and owned. If you decide that that's going to be a domain name that you purchase and you're going to broadcast with that, you have to take ownership of that for its lifetime, or this kind of an event can occur. Somebody can maliciously use your brand historically for their own purposes in the future.
Yeah, so that would have definitely prevented it. So now let's break it down to the next step, saying that, like, in the case that this article covered, a brand had not renewed the domain because they had basically purchased a domain for a specific marketing campaign. And the domain was purchased in 2001, and it was released at some point in time. And then it was purchased by malicious actors in 2022. Now, normally, a good cleaning and scrubbing of DNS records would also have mitigated this risk. And so one of the things that you said earlier, Kyle, was you were talking about, you know, these are things you wouldn't expect to happen with really large organizations. I completely agree. And it's not just on the level of, gee, they should have just continued to purchase or, you know, renew the ownership of their domains, which really for a large organization is an extremely nominal expense. But the second level is, I would expect them to have a solid inventory of their DNS records and to evaluate those DNS records on a periodic basis, at least. And
we look at the business process that's involved in that. And yes, we learn a lot of things because of ramifications of not doing something. As we increase our operational maturity in business, it's the mistakes we made that we learned from that we don't want to make in the future again. However, this kind of mistake, I mean, it's 30 or 40 years old. This is a kind of mistake 40 years ago we made. You don't make that today. This is proper business process in DNS management. And it should be a standard practice inside of any network administrator's list of tasks that they perform. This is DNS 101. If you're going to get rid of something, you have to get rid of all of something. Otherwise, the legacy of that can be utilized against you in the future.
I mean, even just yesterday, I was working on a project where the fact that I had to go in and look at some DNS records for a client caused me to review our manually maintained inventory, right? I always look in terms of total quality management and look at it and say, what is our manually, you know, human maintained inventory of what should be there? And then what's our digital inventory? And in the manual human inventory, we track things such as who made the request for that DNS record, what business initiative was that DNS record associated with, who created it, was it originated from a ticket, a project, is there an expected duration of time at which that's no longer valid? You know, all of those things are tracked. And certainly if something is associated with a marketing tool, and let's say that marketing tool is no longer used by the organization, well, gee, those DNS records shouldn't exist anymore. But yeah, I think all of this goes back to those human processes that need to be there. And there are some tools, some digital tools that really large organizations can use to assist in this matter. But I still think they're no substitute whatsoever for tracking the business side of who requested the DNS record, what business process is it associated with, was it part of like a temporary campaign, is it marketing related? You know, in many cases, this is, you know, 101 of resource ownership tracking. Like, who is the resource owner for this? Because if it was part of a marketing campaign, which is what almost all of these particular issues associated with this particular article we're talking about, those were all domains that were registered as part of a marketing effort.
Yeah, right. So I can't even count the number of times this year, 2024, that this has happened already, where I get a telephone call from a client or from a colleague that is working on a project, and the marketing department, they'll call me up and they say, hey, well, I registered this domain name with GoDaddy, or I registered this domain name with whomever. Now, who gave you permission to register this domain name? Are you the IT person?
Right.
Well, no, I'm going to do this marketing campaign and I bought this domain. Well, let's have a discussion about that for a second. First off, the domain name that you purchased isn't the domain name for your business. So it's not like you bought a subdomain for your business. WentworthConsultingGroup.com is our domain name. If I'm going to do a marketing campaign on security, I might buy a domain name for security.wentworthconsultinggroup.com. But I own WentworthConsultingGroup.com. So if we're buying a domain name, who has the authority to buy domain names in your organization? It sure as heck isn't your marketing person. They should not have that authority. They should be told they don't have that authority. They can have all of the desires to have XYZ as a domain name for their marketing campaign, but it's the responsibility of the technology management department to purchase and maintain and document and apply domain-related information to that campaign. It requires people who are educated in this process to do this. So we're in the process right now of trying to unearth this mess that a client created because they purchased a domain name and lost authentication to that domain information. And there's no email associated with it that's associated with the business. And the employee that did the purchasing no longer works for the company. So getting access to that resource that was used in these campaigns is like pulling teeth. You know exactly what that's like. You have to have managed processes when you're dealing with the naming structure for your company. You wouldn't just, from a business perspective, you wouldn't just allow any Joe Snuffy inside of your company or outside of your company, for that means, to go down to the county seat and register, or to your state or to the IRS and register new business entities inside of or as a sub-entity of your company. You can't do that from an internet perspective either. So you have to manage this structure with integrity, and people who are intellectually responsible and educated for maintaining domain infrastructures have to do that. They have to get under control.
I totally agree. And I think this even goes beyond the security aspect. It's also just a cost aspect. I've done so many projects where I've had to unwind that mess that was the result of any Joe Snuffy with a credit card was allowed to purchase things. And frankly, the owners of the business are oftentimes equally as culpable. You know, so it's not just the marketing department doing it, but it takes so much time to unwind that. And then when there is an issue, I remember so vividly, so many times we've had a ticket or a request from a client that's like, oh, I've got this problem and I'm trying to solve this problem. And I'll look at it and go like, well, where's the login ID for the DNS? In fact, for that matter, where even is your DNS hosted? And then you get to a point where, gee, well, the DNS hosting that you have doesn't actually support the record types that are required, or the publishing time on it is so bad that you can't actually get any sort of DNS record changes published to the world in a timely fashion to resolve the issue. And in the case where you're like, okay, well, if we just had access to the domain information, then we could move the DNS hosting. Well, you can't, because there's no darned inventory. There's no standards for it. So the things that people in business decision-making spaces think, they're like, oh, well, I'm going to buy from GoDaddy, or I'm going to buy from here because it's cheap. It's not cheap. Buying from those spaces is some of the most horrifically expensive choices that you can make, because not only unwinding it is extremely labor intensive, but when those resources are used, they just are so deficient from a technical capability perspective that it takes so long to try to just simply resolve an issue. I mean, so many times outages are occurring because either you can't get to the domain hosting information, you can't get to the DNS hosting information, or the DNS hosting that exists, it doesn't publish records in a timely fashion.
We use this example frequently. You don't purchase your domain structures from just any company that comes up with a better price. No differently than you don't hire 3 or 4 or 5 CPA firms to handle your taxes.
Right.
And well, it sounds, well, it's just a domain name. I just bought a domain name. Well, I just hired this tax guy to make modifications to my books. I mean, I've got a tax guy over here who normally does my books, but this guy over here just came in and just modified my books just for me because I just had a question. Well, first off, that other CPA is responsible. More than likely, that other CPA has reasons that they do things the way that they do. And it all comes down to this cost structure. Just because I can do it today doesn't mean it's going to be beneficial tomorrow. And the money I spend today needs to be in line with the money I spent yesterday in order to make sure that my processes don't continue to cost me more money in the future, spending good money after bad. And more than likely, that good money is astronomically more expensive than if you'd have just had your IT department handle the right task. IT stuff should be handled by IT people.
So one of the things that you very frequently say that is just a reinforcing point to what you just articulated is that there can only be one brain surgeon. And I just, like, to me, that is like a theme song I live by. There can only be one brain surgeon. Somebody has to establish policies, processes, protocols. And then once that's in place, the rest of the organization needs to support that. And the leadership of the organization needs to enforce adherence to the policies. Nothing but chaos, turmoil, high levels of expense, and frankly, a lot of toxicity inside of organizations come from a lack of policies, protocols, processes that are also enforced by the leadership.
We talk about operational maturity all the time. And this is just one of the aspects of operational maturity. You have to establish and add to this the Mike Michalowicz book, The Pumpkin Plan. You have to establish whose pumpkin you're issuing to which person. And they have to understand what pumpkin they're responsible for growing in the business. If you're a marketing person, you grow marketing pumpkins. That's it. That's your biggest pumpkin. You do marketing. But as soon as it crosses the line out of application choice for CRM, application choice for ERP, application choice for DNS management, that's not your pumpkin. And you have to go to the person who's responsible for managing that pumpkin. Extremely important. So
I think another way to think about that is that the business wants to be supportable. In order for them to be supportable and receive support, you know, they have to be in alignment with standards, which means that IT does need to set the standards, but then the business needs to adhere to the standards. Otherwise, they shouldn't have an expectation that they're going to receive support.
And adherence from an executive perspective means dissemination of adherence to the people in your organization. It can't just be something that the owner says, okay, we'll take care of that. You, as an owner of an organization, you have to disseminate how the organization is going to run to the people within your organization. And when it comes to things like technology management, DNS control, as we're talking about here, the dissemination of who handles what tasks in the business is very important so that the rest of the staff can understand when I have this need, this is where I go. And that's right what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I want to pivot to a little bit more on the technical side of this now, going back to the Hacker News article, because I think that the Hacker News article was really not terribly clear about some of those aspects. And I think we've certainly addressed the two core things that people could do to prevent this issue from happening to them. You know, key number one is if you buy a domain and you use it for some sort of a business purpose, like a marketing campaign, even on a short-term basis, that's it. You own that sucker forever. That's rule number one. Rule number two would be you need to have business processes where you are handling your DNS record management review and quality control with a completeness of level of operational maturity, and that includes procurement side, inventory side, standards, and the whole nine yards, right? This cannot be done on sort of a flim-flam basis. It needs to be extremely rigorously structured. And I would also like to inject that it's really the quality control of these things I have personally experienced is above the skill set of someone that's like, you know, a PC technician or your standard IT manager. They just don't have that kind of background in that. This is more like it's okay for them to follow a standard if the standard was developed by somebody like a CISO or a CTO. But I have yet to just see most operational IT that's not in like an executive capacity come up with these standards whole cloth on their own. I just don't see that. I mean, what's your experience?
And I completely agree. In addition, one of the things that we see frequently is an organization will hire a web development company to come in and build their website. And I by your expression, you know where I'm going with this. Your web development company builds websites. They don't manage the keys to your kingdom. Your DNS information, your domain information, are essentially the keys to your business. I've watched web development companies, you didn't pay a bill, you didn't want to use their service anymore. They got all high on the collar and turned off your website, and you lost access to your domain, and your email stopped flowing, and you ended up with all this big struggle as a business owner because you gave the keys to your kingdom to somebody who wasn't responsible for managing it, who shouldn't have been responsible for managing it.
Right.
As a business owner, you own your domain. If you have a contract with an external service provider like Quality Plus Consulting to manage your DNS, that's perfect. But in because they're qualified to do the job, they should be the company responsible for doing the management of your DNS external to your organization. But you own the DNS. The domain name should belong to the entity, not to any other external service provider who is managing that entity. But if you do choose an external service provider, they need to be held accountable for managing your domain name for you.
You've touched on so many incredibly important points here. So I continue to encounter situations where somebody has an agreement with a web dev company, and then the web dev company will literally go and as part of some sort of a, you know, marketing effort, or they'll do domain transfer, something like that. They'll register that domain to the ownership of the marketing company. I'm not talking about just the, like the admin contact or the technical contact. No, 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 no. They list themselves as the owner.
As the owner.
And I have caught these people doing that so many times, and I have called them out on it. And the clients, if they would simply use a procurement process where they enable themselves to be making informed decisions by engaging their CTO or engaging their CISO, rather than just strictly going to the web people, all of these issues could have been avoided. I mean, just in the last 6 months, I have been engaged with a web dev company on behalf of a client. And I think overall, the web dev company does a good job, but there are clearly aspects that it's not their wheelhouse, that they just are not the experts on. And so by the client having me involved, I've been able to put terms and conditions and language in the statement of work agreements with the web dev company and the client that represents the client's best interests. Now, had the client not gotten me involved on that, they wouldn't be having that as a benefit.
There's so much more to DNS and the domain infrastructure of an organization than the website.
Yes. Yes.
That web hosting company doesn't handle your email. Most commonly doesn't handle your email. They don't handle external service providers' where you have APIs connected to an external location to access or to transmit data back and forth. They don't handle access to SQL servers or database access. There's so much. They don't handle remote support or remote access into your network. They handle the website. So you really need to make sure that as a business owner, you need to make sure that your technology department is responsible and managing the DNS records in your organization, not some other external company.
I've personally seen so many clients who have had major outages just because they inappropriately gave access to some either external marketing firm or some external, you know, web development firm to some records. Like I had an example where a client reached out and said, oh, do you have the login credentials to our LinkedIn company page? Because we want to give those login credentials to the external marketing company. Okay. Well, my head about detached from my shoulders. Okay.
Right.
Because I'm like, first of all, it doesn't work that way.
Like, well, it can if you really want to give away the keys to your LinkedIn accounts.
Well, I mean, that is just so wrong.
Right.
In terms of the way to handle that. I mean, like, first off, if there's a marketing company that literally is saying, give us the credentials, oh, please just stop right there.
Yeah, like, stop using the marketing company.
Just do not hire those people because their instincts on things are so apocalyptically bad. You know, a more appropriate request would be something like, you know, hey, can you grant us not like company admin, but like a publisher poster access to your, you know, company LinkedIn page. And then this is the email address of our person at our company, at the marketing company, who's going to do that for you. And we don't need to have admin, just, you know, give us the ability to create posts. I think they call that the creator role or something like that. But the bottom line is that that's a marketing company that actually respects security. And I was just in an email debate yesterday with another web dev company who was literally like not even understanding the hosting technology at WP Engine. And they kept bringing up this commentary about how, well, we need to transfer admin. And it's like, I already have admin. The company already has admin. Because when QPC set up the WP Engine account for the client, we did it where it was owned by the client. QPC doesn't own it. The company owns it. The web dev company doesn't own it, right? So there's really nothing to transfer from an admin perspective. And they demonstrated through this email chain that they didn't even understand what their preferred website hosting company is even capable of. And they had some of the things that they were commenting about was like stuff that they should have handled as part of a migration project. They're like, oh, well, the old stuff that's no longer needed in the account, it hasn't been removed yet. Okay. Well, whose responsibility was it to do that? It's not mine. I'm not the web dev who was engaged to do that migration project. You know, so like there's so many struggles, I think, that a business has in the instance that they don't have their CTO or their CISO involved in these sorts of vendor management engagements or, you know, vendor relationship engagement. Like, you know, you bring it up so many times, you're talking about how the, you know, technology is so nuanced and complex that the business owner really can't all by themselves represent their interests. You know, they really need a relationship with a CTO or a CISO who can advise them effectively. Otherwise, you know, the only decision-making factor that they really have on things is like, well, do I like this person and do I, you know, think I trust them and, you know, do I have a referral to them from one of my friends or something like that? They don't really have anything other than that to specify guardrails on the terms and conditions of the relationship.
Rewind to previous podcast in QPC's Breakfast Bites list. It is a common discussion Very, very common discussion. Business owners think that they can wear all the hats, and you just can't. I mean, Felicia, you're a business owner. I'm a business owner. We understand the fact that we have to surround ourselves with other people to wear those hats. It goes back to Mike's book, The Bumpkin Plan. You can't wear all the hats to manage your business. And yeah. You definitely shouldn't be wearing hats you're not technically trained for. So you should be passing those hats off to trusted individuals to support your business to do that task.
Right. I don't think we've covered this newly registered domains thing quite yet well enough.
That's another big deal that we should.
It's a massive security problem. I mean, massive. So let me tell you my perspective on it, and then I want to hear your perspective on it.
Well, let's define it first.
Yeah.
Let's define it first. So newly registered domain names, you are, let's just use the one in this example, you are msn.com. And you go out and you register msn2.com. Because you have another function in your business you want to do inside of your company, and you don't want it to go to your main domain name. You want it to go to a different domain name. So newly registered domain names are domain names registered. What is it? Within the last 90 days, what is the standard?
I think it's 90 days.
Yeah. So in the last 90 days, and the struggle with this is that most firewalls in the corporate space
and web content filtering, even on endpoints.
Correct. Oh, and even on endpoints now, right, with web content filtering built into endpoint management software.
Right.
Antivirus software, as we used to call it. So those software packages are now set to restrict newly registered domain names from just coming up on your browser. So it'll block newly registered domain names from showing up. And the reason is because scammers use new domain names frequently. They'll change a specific letter and you'll think it's that domain name, and they just registered it within the last 2 weeks. So solutions that security professionals put in and that software developers put in for protecting your system is to prevent you from getting to newly registered domain names. So there's the definition.
Excellent definition. Excellent recap on that definition of it. Yeah. So there's basically a ton of risk associated with newly registered domains. And even just within the last week, I received a request for, we want to use these particular domains associated with marketing efforts, and we want them whitelisted. So I feel like a broken record. I feel like the broken CISO record quite frequently when I'm saying, okay, please do not ask me for whitelisting anything. Creating exceptions is not legally defensible. And the core reason around creating exceptions not being legally defensible is because as a company, you've paid for security protections. You've paid for some level of technical controls, whether it be the endpoint protection software and its web content filtering, or web content filtering through the network layer, and or both, right? You could even be paying for an additional layer, because defense in depth is a fantastic concept. You could also be paying for it through DNS filtering. So all three of those layers, at a minimum, all three of those layers, there's other ways to do it too, but those three layers offer the company the opportunity to not have bad mojo delivered to their users. And so that aspect of blocking the bad mojo is oftentimes based upon dynamically updated, curated, very professionally managed category lists. And there's, I don't know, maybe 15 companies in the world that really do that professionally. And that's all that they do. And they use a ton of AI to do it. And that, right. So it's generally not the IT department who is specifically managing that, right? That's a subscription service. And so it becomes it becomes a professional security product that the company is paying for and subscribing to. So it's no different than like email security,
geolocation
scanning.
Control, all of those solutions.
Right.
There has to be somebody else who's maintaining this, because there's no way your IT department can maintain it.
So it's, you know, it becomes a technical control component of your security posture. As such, when you fill out your cyber insurance application, and your cyber insurance application says, do you have these things in effect? And you say, oh yeah, we have web content filtering, or yeah, we have DNS filtering. We have web content filtering at the endpoint layer and at the network layer, right? So when you say to your insurance company that you have these technical controls in place, you cannot be invalidating your cyber insurance policy by telling your IT to create exceptions to that. And
to create poke holes in it.
Yep.
I mean, that's essentially what you're doing by creating exceptions. Granted, you may have approved the exception, but essentially you poked holes in your solution.
Yeah, I have a wonderful example of this, completely real world example of this. And it's just, I mean, it's fantastic because it drives this home point, this point home very phenomenally. So we had a client who engaged with a particular bank website on behalf of their customers, because they basically, like, you know, they did accounting for them. And it turns out that that bank website had been compromised. And so we ended up getting a support ticket that was like, hey, we can't get to this bank website. You need to allow us access to this bank website. So I go and I look at it. And what is the categorization that's happening? Well, it came up as compromised websites, which is the same sort of functionality that is delivered through the automatic AI classification of newly registered websites. So the way I handled that particular request is I referred the client back to our written policy on how we handle websites that are getting blocked. And then I called them and had a conversation with them. And I basically said, look, if you really deeply need to get to that website, I would really strongly encourage you to utilize a burner computer that is not on your company internal network, because that website is compromised. It is not even remotely legally defensible for you to access that known compromised website from an internal work computer that has, you know, access to other sensitive data. And so I said, if you really want to fix the problem, call the bank and tell them that you can't get to their website because it's compromised. And so basically, I would not create an exception for that, you know, because it's bonkers, right? It's bonkers. In the instances where people want us to create exceptions for newly registered websites, again, I refer them back to our written policy on it. And I'm saying to them, you know, we cannot in good conscience do this, because let's say, for example, that newly registered website isn't fully and competently maintained. Next thing you know, it's compromised and now it's hosting malware. And you've instructed us to create an exception. Now, at the point in time that known malicious content is being hosted through that, it's maybe not a newly registered website anymore, but you've asked for your security solution to be blinded to that new categorization. Well, you've just created a hole through your security, and you will probably get compromised adversely because of that, right? So I think this goes back to the point of marketing needs to be working with the CTO or the CISO or both. Because marketing, if marketing doesn't have respect for the people in those positions, then the productive business collaboration can't happen. You know, it'd be awesome to be able to have that relationship with the marketing people, where they would meet with the CTO or the CISO quarterly and say, hey, we're thinking about these business initiatives. Is there anything that we should be doing proactively? You know, et cetera, et cetera. So what are your thoughts about those things?
In that same discussion, it's not like this used to be this way. So it didn't used to be a major issue, or didn't used to be really an issue at all, that you could create a new domain name today and have it effectively work tomorrow for the entire world. It's the security posture of the world that's changed, that's caused us to have to take additional precautions in protecting clients' networks. And it's these malicious actors that are causing this to happen. We have, when somebody finds a new way to break in to a house, lock companies figure out new ways to create locks to prevent people to get into houses. And this is the situation in technology. So every time, and this is on a daily basis, and the bad actors are increasing in numbers exponentially. So the IT infrastructure is having to work overtime to stay on top of the problems. The reason why we use all of these external resources and why companies have to pay so much money for their solution stack, specifically their security stack, is because you want to maintain your business and you want to keep your business uptime as high as it possibly can be. You don't want these bad actors from taking your networks down or causing stress in your business. So we are having to add new solutions to this list, sometimes once every 6 months, sometimes once a year. We have to add something new to the process. We have to train somebody on how to do something new that they didn't have to do before. And it's because we're trying to protect the network along the way. So maintaining your security posture, it's so important that you're using companies that are intrinsically connected to, one, the world's deliverance of problems and solutions to those problems, and that they're constantly paying attention to how those problems can affect your network. They're implementing great standards in security and doing better than best business practice in how they protect your company's intellectual property. It's extremely important that you're hiring and working with extremely competent technology service providers, not just somebody that's putting together a solution stack because they heard about a new service on the internet. I guess that's the gist.
To that point, I think you just touched on something that's, I think, a bit of a hot button for me. And even just earlier this morning, I got a query from another business owner where they were asking for the answer to a particular question. And I pointed them to the fact that I've written white papers about that particular thing, and I've done a number of podcasts about that particular topic, and really gone into it in very adequate depth through those resources to make it so that someone could be making a contextually and requirements-based informed decision about the direction that they want to take. And this person's response to me was like, this, you know, takes too much time.
And it does. Security is a nonstop 24/7. It's actually more like a 47 if we could cram more hours in a day. Security is an extremely detailed process, requires a lot of people in a single organization to stay on top of the process. And even all the external tools that we use, the automated tools that we use, they're not enough to eliminate the necessity of human interaction with the process. And I don't know that that's ever going to reach that level.
Probably not for as long as we're alive, or probably the next three generations. you know, it still is going to always be required. Somebody defines the requirements in a written format. They evaluate solutions to be able to deliver an outcome against the set of requirements. And then they actually have to do real testing, because the evaluation, the way I would look at it, is kind of like a tabletop exercise versus the real testing is, okay, now we get it. And now we actually do like a, you know, like a real BCDR sort of testing instance. You know, you have your passive tabletop exercises, and then you have your actual real like incident response testing. And I'm just using that as an example, because tabletop exercises can be used for, you know, all kinds of things in decision-making processes. But anyways, my main point is I just find it completely ridiculous that somebody's response to a suite of free, this is the ridiculous part, free resources are available to help you make informed decisions, and you can't make enough time in your life to put yourself in a position to be an informed decision maker. You know, like, not everything in life is simply, oh, gee, I'm going to subscribe to this thing for $150 a month and it's going to solve my problems. You know, to me, that's the same sort of failed paradigm as I see a lot of businesses doing, where they're looking to hire IT, an external IT service provider, and then they want to transfer all risk to that external IT service provider. And then they want to abdicate all involvement in responsibility of delivering any of those outcomes, when 90 to 95% of the problems in a business are people, policy, and process. The IT department is technical controls and support and maintenance. It's not, I mean, if you have a CTO or you have a CISO, yes, they can help you with policy, but unless you've given them that authority of you, over your organization, it becomes an officer of the company that has to be the one who says, I'm approving this policy, and we now as an organization will be held accountable to this policy. And
I wonder, just to go ahead.
Well, until that threshold is met, as far as I'm concerned, the customer is not fulfilling their portion of the shared responsibility model.
I'm really wondering just how much more integrity there would be inside of businesses today if they did put the CTO and the CISO in charge of business operation.
Oh, I mean, you know, that's just like, that's you just chalk that up as one of like Kyle's genius statements of all times, because I continue to have these thought processes over, you know, wow, what would happen if the CTO became the COO?
Or if just there was a flip in order of precedence, order of responsibility, order of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way that the world is running today, if that change doesn't happen, if business executives, if CEOs don't realize that the top person in their organization underneath of them needs to be the CTO, and directly in line with that is the CISO, if they don't realize that here pretty quick, these bad actors are going to consume these businesses. And it's happening. Yeah. It's happening. We see it constantly in the news. This event right now is a great example of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
What we only see in here are just the notices of what affiliated big brands were associated with the event. We don't really see the ramifications of those 8,000 plus domains. And the ramifications are ransomware, stolen PII, remote access to machines, invasive technology solutions being deployed. And a lot of these things we won't see. I mean, this article came out February 26th. We won't see the ramifications of this potentially for 6 or 10 months, because this is what the hacker does. They come in, they sit, they monitor without anybody knowing. And then 10 months later, they activate.
Right.
After they've gathered all the information that they were looking to gather on the machines that they've infected. And if you don't have a CTO or a CISO in charge of your organization's deployment of technology and solutions decisions related to technology, you could be bothered by this and your IT department has no clue it's even happening.
So you touched on one aspect here of the that I think people oftentimes do think about, although I think they don't put enough weight on the adverse impact of the financial adverse impact of the factors you just articulated. I think there's another crucial one that they also typically undervalue or underestimate, which is the adverse financial impact, which of course is now just affecting the whole profitability of the business. And the whole question is, do you want to continue to stay in business? Because if you continue to just light money on fire, then you're not being competitive in the marketplace and just all kinds of problems come from that. And so by not having the right people involved with strategy and those policy decisions, it can lead to not just the adverse financial impact of what bad actors are up to, but it's the decisions that everybody else in the IT realm is also making in the business. So my example of that is, let's say you have a data center and you had 500 server workloads in that data center, and you basically had three people, one person per shift, who was maintaining that data center. And you've already got the real estate, you've got that building, you know, you're already paying the property tax on that and all of those things, right? Those expenses don't really go away if you move those workloads to public cloud. But what does happen if you move those workloads to public cloud is you're now going to pay 5 to 7x the cost of that. Furthermore, I'll add that the people to maintain the public cloud hosted resources are more expensive. And then you have a completely separate risk profile, which is much harder to manage and much harder to visualize. In the realm of now you've got 500 servers sitting in public cloud, then that's a lot harder to assess from and also lock down from a network access perspective. On the other hand, those 500 servers in your data center, oh, that becomes easy to lock down.
That opens up once again, back to a previous podcast about the lack of security inside of cloud infrastructures versus on-premise infrastructures. And the passing off that business executives think that they can do because now they've moved to the cloud.
Yeah.
In relationship to security. And another point in this, in this example of this article, VMware is one of those companies who they specifically highlight where they had two hijacked subdomains found, cal.vmware.com and www.vmwcal.com. So the domain takeover, the affected domain was cal.vmware.com, and the takeover was the second one, www.vmwcal.com. And this was hijacked in July of last year. As we look at this, VMware is a $61.5 billion company in 2024. They probably have processes in place on how DNS is supposed to be managed in their business. Something went awry in that process that caused this issue. More than likely, they have looked at that and have adjusted. They're probably not getting rid of old domains. And they're probably doing better at how they manage the domains that they currently have. So as a small business owner, as a medium business owner, as a business owner that's not doing $1 billion in business, let alone $61 billion in business, it's just as important for your organization to have people in place who can manage this data properly. You can't just think that you're not going to be affected the smaller your business becomes. And although we'll probably have another podcast on it in the future, there are statistics today that are showing an extensive increase in the hacker community targeting small business.
Because they're a soft target.
Because they're now being seen as a soft target. And small business under 20 employees is 88% of the population.
Yep.
So if 88% of the population, I mean, it's the whole reason why Windows computers were attacked by hackers more than Macs were back in the day, because 97% of the population used a Windows machine. And so there were more potential opportunities for them to gain access. And they're realizing that in the small business capacity today. Small businesses have a lot of value to give to the hacker community. And in the mass numbers that they are as a collective, they give more information and easier pathways of extraction than the detail level of work that they have to do with larger companies like VMware. And yet VMware was still penetrated.
You know, I didn't do any research on what cal.vmware.com was for. I hope it wasn't client access licenses.
That would be crazy. Yeah, that would be crazy.
That would be pretty apocalyptic if a component of the licensing structure, so we're now talking about the like customer licensing infrastructure of VMware, was actually the thing that was compromised.
Yeah.
Well, I think we've covered this very well now, and I really genuinely hope that people finally get it, that they need to have a CTO or a CISO or both, you know, or both. And they need to stop asking for whitelisting. They need to stop thinking that they're saving themselves money by not proactively engaging the correct IT resources, that IT needs to be their business partner and not just simply tech support, you know, not an afterthought.
It's not an expense in your business model. It is your business model. You are a technology company. Regardless of whether you wanted to get into technology as a technology company today or not, technology runs your business. You don't. You facilitate technology in your business to conduct business. And the better you do that, the more efficient your business becomes. And if you don't believe it, turn it off. Technology runs your business. Therefore, technologists should run your business.
You always crack me up with that. If you don't believe it, turn it off.
There you go.
You should see how well that works for you, right? Turn it off.
Perspective. Right.
Oh, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Felicia.
Another great, highly educational, free resource for people. I just, you know, we're just trying to move the needle on this because I think we both are so unhappy by people that get really victimized by misinformation or a lack of their own wrong, you know, they've got like the wrong paradigm about how this stuff goes down. You know, you can't just like delegate and abdicate.
There's no way to completely prevent it without unplugging the computer from the wall. However, there are great ways to help protect your network and the integrity of your network. You just have to listen to the right people to get it done.
All right. Thanks so much for your time. And
thanks, Felicia.
Hope everybody enjoyed it. And we look forward to seeing comments. Go out to Podbean and put your comments.